Can't sell it anywhere else, man. It's right here in West Virginia.
This is the Community Podcast with Zach Beard and Aaron Marco, two Morgantown real estate agents highlighting the good people of our city and state. We're taking you behind the sign, connecting interesting people, places, and faces, why they do what they do, and how they came to be doing it. We're building a better community. We've known each other for quite a few years.
Quite a while now.
Quite a while, yeah. You knew me actually back in my IT days.
I did some work at your restaurant. You helped us out enormously at the restaurant.
So during that time, I had left my 9-to-5, and I had gone out on my own. And that was a scary thing. You know, you go from a regular scheduled paycheck to trying to figure out ways to get paid in the community doing jobs and to grow your business.
Yeah, it's a guaranteed paycheck. You know you're getting that W-2 coming, you know.
Yeah, in my last 2 years of having my 9-to-5, I had my real estate license, and I had met a lady at a real estate company, and I did some IT work for her. And she introduced me to a local networking group and thought I might be a good fit to start growing from there. Joined that, and man, let me tell you what, I had zero experience talking in front of people.
It's one of the universal human fears, you know, is public speaking.
Without a doubt. You get up there and, you know, you're stumbling, you're swollen, you're like coughing, trying to figure out the whole thing. And it's tough. And you can feel yourself sweating and, oh, it's horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Towards the end, though, you know, of course, you don't even bring your notes anymore. You wing it. You know what you're doing. And it taught me a lot about business, about meeting people, growing, and becoming part of a community.
Well, Zach, it's so frequently said that it's really not about what you know, it's about who you know. And I would venture to say it's certainly a combination of both those things. And today's guest is going to tell us all about that, because this is the father of modern network marketing and referral business. We have with us today on the Community Podcast, Dr. Ivan Meisner. Dr. Meisner, how are you today, sir?
I am doing fantastic, gentlemen. And please call me Ivan. And just as an FYI, network marketing is generally associated with multi-level marketing, which is not what I have done. BNI is not multi-level. Multi-level marketing is great. We have a lot of members in BNI who do multi-level, but I would just say I'm probably well-known for referral marketing.
Referral marketing.
Referral marketing, right. Absolutely. And what would be the major difference between those, Dr. Meisner, Ivan, I should say?
And guys, please call me Ivan. Well, network marketing is about, it's a direct selling platform where I would sell product to you, but I would also invite you to sell my product also.
Gotcha.
And then I get a commission, a percentage of what you sell, and you would have somebody else, you would sign somebody else up, and I would get a small percentage from that. That's a very bad explanation of what network marketing is. But BNI isn't that at all. When we sign up somebody into BNI, if they bring somebody, we don't get anything from that other than the membership dues they pay. We're more like McDonald's than we are Amway, because we're a franchise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And, you know, and I've been in BNI now for just about 3 years. I'm coming up on my 3-year anniversary at this point in time. And I've really learned a lot about how to grow networks and how to get really plugged into the community in right ways, and ways that help not only myself, but certainly help everybody else around me. And I really like the idea of givers gain. And that's kind of the backbone of BNI. And how did this start to develop for you? And how did you end up developing this whole system?
Well, I'd like to tell you, I had this vision of an international organization with, we now have 10,600 chapters in more than 70 countries around the world. But the truth is, I just needed some referrals for my consulting practice. At the time, I was a management consultant, and I got most of my business through referrals. And so I had gone to a lot of networking organizations that were really mercenary. I'd go to these meetings and everyone was trying to sell to me. And I'd come back from those meetings and I felt like I had been slimed and I needed to go home and get a shower.
Yeah.
And then I went to these other groups that were totally social. It was happy hour and hors d'oeuvres. Nobody was doing business. And I didn't like those either, because I wanted referrals. And so I put together a group, one group. At that time, I had no intention of it being 10,600 groups. One group where, you know, our focus would be on business, but it would be relational. And the glue that would hold it together is the phrase you just said, giver's gain. This idea that if I help you, you'll help me. We'll all do better as a result of it. And to me, giver's gain is more than a phrase. It's a way of living one's life. It's a perspective to view and interact with the world. It's an attitude, not an expectation. And when it's applied properly, it'll change your life. And when it changes enough lives, it'll change the world.
Nicely said. That is absolutely true. And I've seen that at such great work in my local chapter. We say all the time, you'll come for the business, but you'll stay for the relationships. You know, I mean, exactly. it really builds such a strong foundation. And I can speak only about my chapter personally. That's about 40 members currently, and just some of the greatest people coming alongside each other in so many ways, other than business, although business is certainly a large part of it. But in many ways, we spend a lot of time together outside of that as well.
Right. And it needs to be. It's, you know, really those relationships are absolutely key to the success of building any kind of referral-based business. So, and that's why I did BNI the way I did, was I wanted relationships to be an integral element of the referral process. You know, I've said many times, networking is more about farming than it is about hunting. It's about cultivating relationships with other business professionals.
Exactly right. And, you know, it really makes you almost a community expert too. You know, in real estate, the field that we're in, when you get somebody moving here, you can either, you know, introduce them to the chapter and they can build all those relationships, or you can just, you know, you're almost the go-to for anything they need. Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
I know a guy. Yeah. I
mean, it's about becoming a connector.
It really
is. Connecting people together.
It really is. And I've had that opportunity so many times, especially since my, you know, I was lucky enough, you know, I came out of the restaurant business here in our local town for 30 years. So I knew a lot of people anyway, you know, so I had a pretty decent network of people that I knew and was familiar with myself. But BNI really put that on another level as I, you know, came into that organization.
Touching on that real estate note, you have Caissa, right?
Caissa Properties, the patron goddess of chess. That's what Caissa means.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? How did it get started?
Yeah, I started that in 1982. I started Caissa 3 years before I started a BNI. At least I started my real estate business 3 years before I started BNI. It's kind of a strange way how I started investing in real estate. I wanted to buy a piece of property. I wanted to buy a condo. And I was also going to graduate school. And so I saved up money. I had not planned on buying real estate because I couldn't afford it because I was going to graduate school. But I had saved up money for my first year at the University of Southern California, which was, you know, crazy expensive. And so I saved up about $5,000 to pay for tuition for at least a semester, maybe a little bit more at SC. And because I had worked all summer. And at the same time, I applied for a student loan. And I had never applied for a student loan. I didn't know how easy they were to get. Mm-hmm. And much to my surprise, I got the student loan for $5,000. So here I had $5,000 in cash and a student loan of $5,000. And I thought, okay, what do I do with this cash? Because you can't buy real estate with your student loan.
That's right.
You can only use it for school. So, you know, I thought maybe I won't take the student loan. Maybe I'll just use the money that I saved. But I thought, you know, I think I'll take the student loan and invest the $5,000 in cash that I saved. And I bought a condo. You know, I bought a condo. It was not 20% of the down payment, but so I had to pay PMI. Yeah. It was stupid interest rates back then. But it was my investment in a place where at first I lived. So I lived there for a couple of years before I bought a second place and then kept that. Then here's the beauty of compounding value of real estate. I flipped that condo a few years later for a home up in the mountains. which I rented. I rented the condo, then I rented the home in the mountains, which I then later flipped for a bigger home in the mountains, which I used myself and I rented out. And then I flipped that third property that started with $5,000. I flipped that third property for two homes in Texas.
Wow.
By now I had paid off the mortgage. So I now had two homes in Texas, mortgage free, from a $5,000 investment. I have since, and all of those were 1031 exchanges. I have since flipped those two homes for half of a commercial building I built in Dripping Springs that was $1.5 million.
It's incredible.
So that $5,000 cash investment that I used rather than use it instead of the student loan, is now half of a $1.5 million commercial building. Now that took 40 years, 39 years. So it didn't happen overnight, but over the years I've continued to buy real estate. I now have a dozen properties with about 50 or 60 tenants, almost all commercial properties with about 50 or 60 tenants. It started because I got a student loan, which, by the way, I paid off in full. Interest and everything, I paid off. I ended up getting a lot more on that student loan. I borrowed more money, which I didn't have any cash to reinvest at that point. So it was just as I earned money, I bought property. And I was able over time to pay off the mortgages. So I have a dozen properties now, mortgage free, that make me a very, very nice income.
Well, I tell you, the ability for real estate to generate wealth is it's hard to beat. Obviously, it takes some time, but it is certainly a great wealth generator. You know, most people are going to know you from BNI that they're familiar with it. They're going to know you for that. I know that you also like to travel quite a bit, and you recently had traveled to Antarctica, which is place that I am certainly just fascinated by. Can you tell us a little bit about that trip?
It was an amazing trip. It was a 19-day trip, 15 on the ocean. We went to South Georgia Island and a couple of other islands on the way down to Antarctica. You know, you hear sometimes people say that Antarctica is a desert. It's a desert.
Yeah.
I mean, when you go there, you get it. It's a desert. There is nothing growing. You know, I went in December, which is summer for Antarctica. And so the beaches didn't have ice on them. That, you know, there was a lot of snow and ice just inside the beaches a little bit. But I mean, there was nothing, no moss, no fungus, no plants. It's a desert on Antarctica. Now, when I was on South Georgia Island and Elephant Island and some of the other islands down there on the way, they still had vegetation. By the way, South Georgia is near the Falklands, just to give you a sense.
Okay.
Absolutely amazing. I didn't see dozens of penguins or hundreds or thousands. I saw tens of thousands.
Wow.
Of penguins. I mean, I landed, we would do beach landings in Zodiac boats. There's no facilities. So you get on the boat and you go to a beach and you step out into the ocean and onto the beach. And there were a couple of landings that we did where there were literally, as far as the eye could see, penguins, seals. And I mean, it was an amazing experience. Fur seals, you got to keep an eye. They're bad boys.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Fur seals are very, very bad boys. You turn your back, they charge you. So, and they bite. They have really sharp teeth. So they taught us that when one of the seals, it could be any of the seals could charge, but the fur seals were more aggressive, that when one of the seals charge you, you just raise your arms, you know, and they stop. And when they told me that, I'm like, okay, but it worked. And, you know, if you raise your arms, they think you're like really big and they stop their charge. So, you know, you don't go there unprepared. If you're going on a good expedition, they train you, you're prepared. They're very concerned when you go from one island to another island about you carrying seeds from one island to another, not to Antarctica because it wouldn't grow,
right,
but from one island to another. And so they're really good about making sure your boots are cleaned, your material is cleaned, so that when you go from one place to another, you're not carrying any vegetation that isn't native to that island. It was an incredible experience. Saw amazing, amazing things, whales, seals, penguins, all kinds of different kinds of penguins.
Where'd your trip start at? Where'd you take off from?
It started in Ushuaia. So we went from Austin, Texas to Ushuaia, which is in Argentina. It's really like the southernmost tip of Argentina. And from Argentina, then we went to South Georgia Island, which is owned by the British. Population like two. I mean, nobody lives on South Georgia Island. Before COVID, there was maybe population 10. You know, there was a handful of people that lived there. There's not a lot of people that live on South Georgia. I'm guessing on the population.
Sure. Right.
There was nobody where we landed. And then from there, we went to another couple of islands on the way to the Antarctic Peninsula. And our last day and a half was on the Antarctic Peninsula, which was truly amazing. And we went through icebergs that were three or four stories tall, two or three times the size of an aircraft carrier in terms of length. You know, I've been on an aircraft carrier. These things were like three times the length and three or four stories tall above the water.
Amazing. Sounds like an absolutely incredible trip. One I would like to make one day myself for sure. Do you have any upcoming travel plans that are unique?
Yes, I do. I am a future astronaut with Virgin Galactic. I don't know when we will be actually flying. I know Branson flew. He did the first flight with passengers last year. And again, this is one of those things where my real estate business has been very good to me. I have, you know, very gradually built this real estate company, and I take the profits from the real estate company and do cool things.
That's about as cool as it gets.
This definitely is. Amazing
life experiences, and I invest in art. And so I've been buying art for 30 years and try to have amazing life experiences. But, you know, I think people buy real estate and they expect a, you know, quick return. It didn't work that way for me. You know, owning the first couple of properties I owned, it cost me money to own. You know, out of pocket, I got tax advantages, which helped. But it cost me money to own them. But over time, you know, I started making money. And my goal was to pay off the mortgages. Not everybody wants to do that. There's a lot you can do with leveraging cash. Mm-hmm. God bless you. If you can sleep at night and do that, do it. I like owning real estate and just getting the cash flow from it. And so that's the direction I took.
So is there any kind of training involved going to space? Physical training?
Yeah, not a lot, because you're a passenger. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, do you get any training to fly on a plane? Well, you know, this is a seatbelt. This is how it works. There's the exit. You know, so you get a little even to go on a plane.
Maybe conditioning is a better word.
Yeah, you do 3 days. There's 3 days of preparation. So when you're scheduled to fly, you have to get there 3 or 4 days early, and you go through three full days of training. But you're basically a passenger. You're not flipping switches. You're not going to fly that thing down. You're a passenger. Now you can do much more extensive training if you want. I have the opportunity to do the centrifugal location where you go in and they'll
test,
have
the
you
G
do
forces.
You do about three and a half G's, which isn't bad. See, it's not like Virgin Galactic. It's not like, you know, the NASA ships where you're taking a rocket straight up into space. Instead, you're taking a plane to, I don't know what it is, 60,000 feet maybe. And from that plane, they drop the spaceship. And so you're missing a lot of the atmosphere, because the rocket ship drops from a plane at somewhere around 60,000 feet and then takes you into 50 miles into space. Anything over 50 miles, you're in space, according to NASA.
And how long will you be able to stay at altitude? How long
you're
is the
only,
ride?
You know, the whole flight's maybe 2 hours. You're only in space for about 10 minutes. Uh-huh. It's a suborbital flight, but you come back and you get Virgin Galactic astronaut wings.
That is absolutely terrific. What a great, great opportunity that is.
So shifting gears a little bit, how do you see, referral network growing, especially in the world of virtual reality? You know, they always talk about the world getting smaller and smaller, and that last 2 years has been Zoom calls, and now we're going into metaverse, omniverse, all those different things.
Yeah.
You think that's a good tool?
Absolutely. Ironically, in 2018, I wrote an article that was published at entrepreneur.com. You can go find it there. That basically said the future of face-to-face is online. Now, when I wrote that, my organization flipped out. It was like, no, say it's not so. You started this network. How could you believe that? But I believed that because of the advancements in technology, holographic imaging, 3D technology, the metaverse, mixed reality, all of these things led me to believe that within 10 years, that online networking was, it was inevitable. And I wrote about that and published that in 2018 for Entrepreneur. COVID expedited that. It did not make it happen. It would have happened anyway, but it expedited it. The technology today is amazing. I mean, look at us. We're here looking at each other on a video camera, many miles apart. This was unheard of when I started BNI. This is 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of stuff.
Oh, for sure.
When I started BNI. You know, the second largest line item in my budget when I started BNI was the phone bill, the telephone bill. Employees were number one, phone bill was number two. Calling 30 miles away was a semi-long distance. I forget what they called it, but it was expensive. Calling, another state was incredibly expensive. Forget about calling a country. That was outrageously expensive. Here we are having a video webcam interview for virtually nothing. So the technology is going to do nothing but advance. And we can either, and I've said this back in my article, we can either be disrupted or we can lead the disruption. I want to lead the disruption. And that's why BNI, by the way, flipped from 10,000 in-person weekly meetings to 10,000 online meetings within weeks.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, the technology is certainly a blessing, and in some ways maybe a curse a little bit for some of us that are more holdouts. You know, I know our group met, you know, it gave us the opportunity to continue meeting and continue to doing things. Although it obviously during COVID, there was a reduced capacity to do certain referrals and business because a lot of businesses were technically shut down. However, do you think that you're losing a little bit in the virtual world when you're doing meetings only virtually as opposed to the in-person? Do you losing a little bit of that personality and that ability to rub up against other people?
I do, but I got a lot of gray hair. I think our children and our grandchildren are going to say, what? That was an issue? You know, it's inevitable. What I'd like to see happen mostly now, and I'd like to see this in BNI, is look, first of all, here's our policy. You want to meet online as a chapter? Great. You want to meet in person as a chapter? Great. Just make sure you're safe. Safety first. You want to meet as a hybrid? Great. What I think is inevitable, and which I lean towards because of what you're saying, is a hybrid environment. I would love to see groups meet in person once a month and online three times a month. Now, is that a requirement? Absolutely not. But I think isn't that kind of the best of both worlds? You're meeting online, which is, oh, by the way, crazy easy. It's so easy to meet online, but there is your point of there's nothing quite like meeting someone face-to-face, three-dimensional, shake their hands, have a personal conversation. There's nothing like that. And that's why I think the hybrid is an unbelievable transitional period, if not permanent. certainly transitional.
Yeah, I feel like the face-to-face meetings have a little bit higher accountability for the members when you can look at each other and say, sure. You know, obviously, you know, there is a system to this, and a lot of people that haven't been in BNI don't really know the flow of the meeting when it's ran properly. But, you know, when you announce the number of referrals you had last week and things of that nature, it gives you a higher level of accountability for your peers and, you know, really people that are your friends and essentially coworkers. You know, we say all the time that, you know, you're really training your sales force, really. So you're teaching, you know, 35, 40 other people, and in some chapters much more than that, people to go out and how to sell your products. And I think that accountability factor seems a little bit more important when it's in person.
And I can't argue with that. Yeah. I agree. And I suggest we all keep an open mind, because when the world went from telegraph to telephone, people were like, what is this thing? You know, a telephone? And when we went from radio to television, or even newspaper to radio, and then radio to television, when we went from telephone to fax machines, I was one of them. It's like, what do I need a fax machine for? You know, I just FedEx it, get it there overnight. And then, you know, and then pagers. And then, you know, you guys look too young to know the big brick telephones. You
know, we're familiar.
The big brick. Yep. It was like a brick. It was huge with an antenna. And then, you know, mobile, truly mobile phones. My first mobile phone after the brick was a car phone. Not a mobile phone, a car phone. It was totally mobile. You could only use it
in your car.
And then, you know, and now the mobile phone and now the smartphone. Look, the truth is technology marches forward.
It does.
So we either get left behind or we lead it. I think the future is full. I think what is most predictable about the future is that it will be unpredictable. It's predictable unpredictability. And we need to embrace the change as it comes along if we want to pivot appropriately.
And I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that at all.
And like you said, lead the change. You know, one thing our state has done in West Virginia is we've started a remote worker program where we've encouraged people to come here from out of state and maintain their jobs.
Financially encourage them to the tune of what, 12 grand?
12 grand, yeah, with the Ascend program.
To come here, you know, and which has really spurred some locations here to really begin to truly, seriously invest in their infrastructure for the internet, because the ability to remote work is so great. And we have such a great quality of life here as far as the outdoors and, you know, many, many things to do here. So that's been really great for us. Okay. Couple other things, you know, I've read so many things from you, and of course every week we listen to various podcasts from BNI, and you've got such a great way of making things relational, like you just did with the technology. There's a couple of concepts I wanted to talk about and maybe get your opinion on a little bit. One of the underpinning concepts of Beyond Giver's Gain is this concept of VCP. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why it's so important?
Yeah, so VCP stands for visibility, credibility, profitability. And it's the foundation of everything I teach as it relates to networking. It basically, it means that you got to go, first you have to be visible. People have to know who you are and what you do. Then and only then can you get to credibility, where people know who you are, they know what you do, they know you're good at it. And then when you get to credibility, which by the way, it takes time to get to credibility. Then when you get to credibility, then and only then can you move to profitability, where people know who you are, they know what you do, they know you're good at it, and they're willing to give you referrals on an ongoing reciprocal basis. It's all about this idea of, you know like, and trust. But from a perspective of referrals, what tends to happen is that most people use networking as a face-to-face cold calling opportunity. You know, hi, my name's Ivan, let's do business. And they just jump into trying to sell to one another rather than to build a relationship with one another. In one of my books, we call that premature solicitation, which you don't want to say fast three times, it'll get you in trouble. But that's what happens in networking, is that people, you know, they try to jump over visibility, they try to jump over credibility, and they want to get right to profitability or getting referrals before there's any kind of relationship. And I think one of the reasons that happens is that we don't teach this in colleges and universities anywhere in the world. We don't teach networking, referral marketing. And so what happens is people get out and they get desperate for business. And the truth is desperation is not referable. Mm-hmm. When you're desperate, that's not referable. And because we don't teach this in school, you know, people go out, they start a business, they need to make sales, and they go right into sales mode instead of relationship building mode.
Yeah, well said. And I've seen that at work greatly in our chapter. Like I said, I think, you know, we have, I don't know the other chapters, but I know that our relationships are very deep and very strong. And, you know, one of the things you say about, you know, your network is having a wide network, but also having a good deep network, and, you know, and having those really, you know, the credibility part of that, you know, in the VCP becomes something that you also lend of yourself. When you're referring somebody else to somebody, you're really giving a piece of your own credibility at that point in time. And you really have to make those relationships and know who those people are in order to attach your name to them.
That carries a lot of weight.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's very true. And the wide and deep, what I say is, you know, if your network is a mile wide and an inch deep, it'll never be very powerful. Mm-hmm. That you need a network that is wide, but in places it's got to be deep, meaning you have to have certain relationships where you have a deep relationship with that person. You care about them. You want them to be successful. They care about you. They want you to be successful. So your network needs to be both wide and in places with some people, it needs to be deep.
You know, in what I do, I hold maybe one of the more unique designations in BNI. I do self-protection instruction, you know, so I teach a lot of pepper spray classes, defensive handgun classes, and unarmed self-defense classes, things of that nature. So that's actually my designation.
Many, many years of martial arts. I enjoy the martial arts.
Yeah, and so do I. And, you know, so a unique designation, I think, probably in BNI. But I've seen... What I see is the relation between principles, underpinning principles. You know, a lot of things look at techniques, so to speak, and the martial arts probably represents that as well as anything else, where everybody wants to look at the technique, but it's really it's the principles that underpin that technique that make it so powerful. And in BNI, I've just seen so many things in regards to things like VCP and the giver's gain and so forth. But one of the things that I've seen that's been so powerful in BNI is it makes you focus on knowing your business, what your business is, and maybe what your best yes is, but maybe even more importantly, knowing what your business doesn't do and being able to articulate that, what is not a good referral for you. And has that been some of your, the way you've seen that?
Yeah. One of the things I see with particularly new businesses is that they'll take on anything remotely related to their business. Because it's income, it's money. And, you know, if it's money, I'll take it. What people realize, the longer they're in their business, the better they get, the more they realize that, in fact, having a specialty is more effective. That if you can be the absolute best at this specialty, and that specialty could, you know, cover a number of things, but if you're the absolute best in that specialty, you're going to get a lot more referrals. And that's counterintuitive. That's definitely counterintuitive. I remember walking into a BNI chapter once in New York, and they had five lawyers in the chapter. And I was like, wow, you guys have five lawyers. How's that working out? And they're like, it works out great. You know, one does wills and trusts, one does family law, one does business law. Each one had a different specialty. And I said, you guys don't step on each other's toes. They said, no, we're really clear about if I get a client, if I have a client that needs a will and I don't do it, I refer it to the other attorney because that's his specialty. He does a better job. And if he has a client that needs to have a business contract, he refers them to me. They said to me, they get more referrals from the five of them than they do from any other five people in the chapter, because they all have clients that have needs that interrelate with each other. And that takes a pretty smart, that takes a savvy, experienced business person to recognize. What tends to happen is, especially with less mature, and I don't mean age-wise, but less mature business people in terms of how long they've been in business, is they just take anything that comes through the door.
Yeah,
and that's... that's not always a good idea. I mean, I get it. Sometimes you got to do what you got to get to do what you want to do. But the sooner you can get to that point, the better.
Where do you see things going in the next 5 years? There's a lot of uncertainty in the market right now. Inflation, whether it's transitory, how long is it here to stay? Where is it going to go ultimately? There's a lot of questions. We got supply chain issues. I mean, certainly the business community is looking some of the strongest headwinds it's seen in a long time. Where do you see things going at this point in time? And how do you read the lay of the land?
So, you know, what I would leave with people is two things. One is, your windshield is bigger than your rear view mirror on purpose. It's really important that you not live in the past. If all you're doing is looking at your rear view mirror, you're going backwards. Now, I mean, I get it. Sometimes you got to go backwards a little bit to make a turn, but you got to be looking at your windshield. You got to be looking at the future. And there are opportunities that lay ahead. But today more than ever, you need your network. You need people who have your back, who are there to help you. Your network is a beacon of hope in a sea of fear. And when you have a powerful personal network, it can help you focus on that windshield, and they can help you guide yourself in a direction that will make your business as successful as it possibly can be. And so, you know, we live in a predictable unpredictability. Look forward, look for opportunities, talk to your network, get advice, get suggestions, and follow the path of the technology that is changing the world.
Very good. Well, we really appreciate taking time. I know we've both been pretty excited about meeting you. We've both been involved in BNI for quite a long time. Myself as treasurer, Aaron as president, and it's an honor to get to talk to you here.
Well, it's truly my pleasure to do this interview, and I'm happy to come back anytime. I've got several books in the works, and maybe when one of my next books come out, I'm happy to come back.
That fantastic. Sounds terrific. Thanks for your graciousness, and thanks for jumping on the Community Podcast with us here. We are certainly very grateful.